presents The Sophia Teachings with Robert Powell, Session 5.
The Russian poet and philosopher Vladimir Solovyov wrote many beautiful, inspiring poems resulting from his Sophia visions. Here's one from the year 1898. Between waking and dreaming, at all times you are there, day and night. Your gaze penetrates me to my innermost core, full of radiance, full of strength. The ice melts, billowing clouds dissolve into light. Flowers are blooming around me. Transparent tones sound silently in the ethers. Everywhere I sense you. Enveloping only water and light, and in the blue shimmering distance, the all flows to me in unity. Yet the eyes remain, radiant like stars, in the flight of all appearance. This wonderful poem by Vladimir Solovyov evokes for us something of a mystical experience of the divine Sophia. We can imagine back in the ancient mystery temples of Egypt, the priests of the Egyptian mysteries experiencing the divine Isis in much the same way through the initiation of the Egyptian mystery temples, entering into a communion, a knowledge, a profound relationship with divine Isis, whose being resounded tone, beauty, light, warmth, and grace. We are now living in a new age when the possibility of such experiences is opening up again for all human beings. This raises the question, what is the new age? This is an essential part of the Sophia teachings to understand what the New Age is and what the role of the Divine Feminine is in this New Age. If we look at Blavatsky and Steiner, and in this century, Valentin Tomberg, as bearers, as proclaimers of the teachings of the New Age, we can see that an essential element in their teaching is the idea of reincarnation. This, too, belongs to the new unfolding of the mysteries of the Divine Feminine, that each human being should come to a knowledge and an experience of the fact that every one of us has lived on the earth before, in previous incarnations, that our own present life, our own biography, can really only be understood on a deeper level as a consequence, as a continuation, a metamorphosis of earlier existences, earlier lives on earth. This was one of the central proclamations of Madame Blavatsky and also of Rudolf Steiner to bring the teaching of reincarnation to Western humanity. And the whole panorama of cosmic evolution, as described by Rudolf Steiner, really makes sense only against the background of reincarnation, that we ourselves have existed with the different stages of the earth from time immemorial, and that we ourselves, in the present stage of earth evolution, since a certain moment in the far distant past, that we ourselves have incarnated upon the earth again and again, since the event known as the fall. In the Oriental religions, such as Hinduism and Buddhism, of course, reincarnation is taught as a matter of fact. And we can ask the question, why did reincarnation become excluded from the West? Why, for example, was reincarnation not taught by Jesus Christ? To understand this question, we need to grasp that humanity had to pass through a particular period of time not knowing about reincarnation and karma in order to develop the sense of being a free and independent personality. We can see how knowledge of reincarnation and the consequences of reincarnation, that is, the idea of karma or destiny, could prevent someone from really unfolding their free initiative. How may we understand this? If we look at Indian culture, where reincarnation and karma have been taught and understood as a matter of fact, we can see that there is a tendency to develop a certain passivity in relationship to life. That is, there is the danger of becoming a fatalist, of having the feeling that one's life is predetermined by fate according to one's karma or destiny, and that therefore one is powerless really to affect or influence one's life. Of course, this is a superficial level of understanding of reincarnation and karma. On a more advanced level, we find in Hindu culture and also in Buddhism the concept of overcoming and transforming one's destiny. Nevertheless, in the wise guidance and unfolding of evolution, it was necessary for Western humanity to be oblivious to the idea of reincarnation and karma, at least for a period of time. And that has been the case during the last 2,000 years. If we look in particular at Christianity, we find no indication of reincarnation except for one statement by Jesus Christ in the Gospel of St. Matthew, where he points to John the Baptist as being the reincarnated prophet Elijah. Rudolf Steiner, earlier this century, spoke also of this relationship between John the Baptist and Elijah, spoke of Elijah reincarnating as John the Baptist. So this is the only example we can find in the whole of the Gospels which would point to reincarnation. But as Jesus Christ himself said to his disciples, "There are many things that I cannot teach you now, but which you will understand later, and which will be shown to you by the Spirit of Truth, the Holy Spirit." With these words, Christ is really pointing to a later age when the idea of reincarnation would become accessible also within Christianity. Against this background, we can understand how now in this new age, reincarnation is being taught also within a Christian context. We can understand that reincarnation was one of the teachings that Christ could not bring 2,000 years ago, but which is to come now in this new age. So what is the new age? There are many different ideas relating to this, one of the most widespread ideas being that the new age is the age of Aquarius. However, as any astronomer can confirm, the vernal point, which is the marker of the different astronomical ages, the vernal point is still in the constellation of Pisces. We are at present still in the age of Pisces. However, the vernal point is moving gradually backwards through Pisces. At the present moment in time, the vernal point is at 5 degrees in the constellation of Pisces, and moving at a rate of 1 degree every 72 years, we can say that in approximately the year 2375 AD, the vernal point will enter Aquarius and the Aquarian Age will begin. So if the present time, this present new age, is not the age of Aquarius, what is it? We can approach this question from at least two different perspectives. The first perspective I'd like to look at is against the background of the words of Christ himself concerning his return, his coming again to the earth. When Christ was asked by his disciples what would be the signs of his coming again, he spoke of war, earthquake, famine, and also signs in the heavens. And in fact, if we look at the 20th century, we can see that the 20th century is precisely a time of war, earthquake, and famine on an unprecedented scale. We need only consider in the year 1906 the most powerful earthquake to rock the North American continent took place in San Francisco. Shortly after 1914, the First World War broke out. 1939, the Second World War. And it is estimated that in the 20th century alone, over 100 million people have died through war. So the 20th century reveals itself in an unprecedented way as an age of war, and indeed a time when many extraordinarily powerful earthquakes have struck. We can think of the 1923 earthquake in Tokyo, resulting in the death of over 100,000 people, and many other powerful earthquakes during the course of the 20th century. Again, looking at the problem of famine in the different regions of the world, this century provides us with a sorry story of hunger and death through hunger of countless millions of people during the course of the 20th century. So the 20th century seems to fulfill at least some of the criteria spoken of by Christ. So if the 20th century is the age of Christ's second coming, how can we understand this? I worked with this question for many years, and with the help of Anne Catherine Emmerich's visions, was able to discover the exact length of the life of Jesus Christ, from the birth in Bethlehem through the mystery of Golgotha. The length of the life of Christ amounts to exactly 33 1/3 years. This is a key rhythm for understanding the unfolding of the new age, and understanding this new age to be precisely the age of the second coming of Christ. Before going into any details as to the significance of this 33 1/3 year rhythm of the life of Jesus Christ, I'd just like to draw attention to one phenomena, and that is that the second coming of Christ is not to be understood as a return of Christ in a physical body. This would be a complete misunderstanding. The Greek word relating to the second coming is parousia, which means presence. Christ is speaking not of an incarnation, but of a renewed presence. We can understand this to be a renewed presence within the aura of the earth, as a guiding, inspiring, and transforming being who is accompanying humanity from now onwards in this new age, accompanying humanity as a radiant presence within the earth's biosphere, within the realm that is known in esotericism as the etheric. This is the world that permeates all the forces of nature, the forces of life. This is the earth's biosphere, the realm of life forces, and it is in this realm that the presence of Christ may be experienced in this new age. So, looking back 2,000 years ago, we can say that Christ incarnated into a physical body. This was the physical body of Jesus of Nazareth. The incarnation of Christ, this cosmic divine spiritual being, took place at the baptism in the Jordan. And the Christ indwelt this physical body of Jesus of Nazareth for 3.5 years until the death and resurrection on Golgotha. These were the 3.5 culminating years of the 33 1/3 years of the life of Jesus Christ. As it says in the Gospel of St. Luke, the baptism in the Jordan took place when Jesus was about 30 years old. In actual fact, he was 29 years, 9.5 months of age. Then there took place this extraordinary event, the descent of the Son of God into the physical vessel provided by Jesus of Nazareth, and there took place a union to create what Soloviev calls the God-man, the union of a divine being and a human being, in perfect union, Jesus Christ, the God-man. If we look back 2,000 years ago, the Christ incarnated into a male form, and his disciples were male. He proclaimed his teaching in the context of a patriarchal culture, the Jewish culture. Now, something completely different is taking place with the return of Christ in the etheric realm, in the biosphere of the earth. For this return of Christ is not on a physical level, but is on the etheric level. We can speak of a return or even a reincarnation of Christ in an etheric body rather than in a physical body as 2,000 years ago. This return of Christ, therefore, is a reincarnation of the Christ in an etheric body, that is, a body of life forces, the body that is invisible to physical sight, but which clairvoyants can see permeating the physical body and maintaining the physical body through the flow of life energy coursing through the etheric body. It is in such a body that the second coming of Christ is taking place. And in order to grasp the full significance of this, there is a fundamental esoteric fact which we need to take account of, and that is that every male has a female etheric body, every woman has a male etheric body. The implications, therefore, of this reincarnation of the Christ in an etheric body is that with this return of the Christ, it is the divine feminine that is becoming activated. It is a polarity to the divine masculine that was activated and proclaimed by Christ 2,000 years ago. Evidence of this new era of Christianity, the ushering in of the age of the divine feminine through Christ himself, can be found if one looks at the life and work of Valentin Tonberg. We've referred already to the great Our Mother prayer taught by Valentin Tonberg. This Our Mother prayer is, I believe, the central prayer for the new age of Christianity, for the new dispensation of the Christ taking place now, just as 2,000 years ago, the central prayer of Christianity was the Our Father, the Lord's Prayer. This time, with the return of Christ in the etheric realm, it is the Our Mother prayer that Christ himself is teaching, that was given by Christ through Valentin Tonberg to humanity. This great prayer, the Our Mother, signifies the whole thrust of what the return of Christ is all about. Just as 2,000 years ago, Christ came for the salvation of humanity, now, with the return of Christ in the etheric, in the realm of life forces, he is coming for the redemption of the earth and all the beings of the earth, all the nature beings, now it is the time of the spiritual transformation of the earth. This is the background to the second coming of Christ, to the return of Christ in the etheric. And the Our Mother prayer conveys to us that we have a unique role to play in helping the work of Christ for the transformation, spiritualization, and redemption of Divine Mother Earth. This is the extraordinary implication of the New Age, and how out of this we can see how important it is that we grasp the reality, the livingness of the Divine Feminine, that we learn to see the whole planet as a living being. Some astronauts have spoken of how, looking down upon this planet from outer space, they have seen the most beautiful, wonderful, blue-shrouded planet of this being, a truly extraordinary feminine appearance, like a jewel in cosmic space, radiating goodness. And astronomers have described the immense feeling of love and unity which they have felt for the planet Earth. Something of this feeling now can be awakened in each one of us without having to go out into outer space, if we turn our inner hearts and minds to the Christ and to his work now in the transformation of the whole world of nature. The central mystery of the 20th century is the mystery of the return of Christ in the etheric. Rudolf Steiner was one of the first human beings to speak of this event. Already from the year 1910, he began to proclaim this return of Christ in the etheric, saying that it was imminent, that it would begin in the 1930s. In fact, for Steiner, this was the most important event, the greatest spiritual event of the 20th century, and he saw his whole life's work really as a preparation for this event. And in the life work of Valentin Tonberg, we see someone who continued this impulse and really prepared the way for a deeper relationship and connection with this whole event through his teaching of the Our Mother prayer and through his teaching of the Little Rosary, which helps to grasp and feel and experience this new dispensation, this unfolding of the Divine Feminine, which is becoming activated now through the Second Coming of Christ. I'd now like to go into more detail concerning the Second Coming. This is not an instantaneous event. This is an event that is slowly unfolding, beginning in the 20th century, and which will last for some 2,500 years. The New Age will last for this period of time, around 2,500 years. And during this time, the Christ will work within his etheric body, within the etheric aura of the earth, as a powerful transforming being working for the transformation of the whole of nature. And every human being is invited to participate in this work. Soloviev spoke of the human being as being the Messiah of the cosmos. And prior to Soloviev, the great German romantic poet Novalis, who was also profoundly inspired by the Divine Sophia, spoke of the human being as the Messiah of nature. In this idea, the beings of nature look towards the human being as the potential Messiah, just as we look to Christ as a Messiah for humanity. This signifies that we human beings have a task, a mission, a responsibility towards nature to help in the work of the spiritualization and transformation of nature. This task of humanity towards nature has by and large been ignored within the history of Christianity up until now. Although there are exceptions, of course, we can think of the many monasteries where there have been farmers who have worked on the land. However, the full impact of the words of St. Paul in his letter to the Romans has until now not really been grasped by humanity. These words of St. Paul refer to the creation eagerly awaiting the revealing of the sons and daughters of light. For the whole of creation has been groaning in travail, awaiting redemption through the sons and daughters of light, that she may be freed from the bondage of decay and may attain the glorious liberty of the children of God. This groaning in travail refers to the groaning of the beings of nature looking to humanity for redemption. We can see in the life of Christ himself how he was able to relate to the beings of nature. We need only think of the event of the stilling of the storm on the Sea of Galilee. Christ Jesus was with his disciples in a boat on the Sea of Galilee. A great storm suddenly blew up and he was asleep. The disciples were fearful and anxious, woke him, and he arose and spoke to the wind and the waves, and it became still. And the disciples said, "What kind of man is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." Why did they obey him? Because they heard the voice of divine love speaking to them. This is what the beings of nature long to hear, the words of divine love, the voice of divine love speaking to them. And this is the task of humanity now, with the help of Christ, to begin to pour our love, our devotion, our inner warmth and strength of spirit into the world of nature, to give back to nature what nature has freely bestowed upon us for our very existence. Here and there we can find examples of saints who have developed something of this quality. We can think, for example, of St. Francis of Assisi, who was able to speak to the birds, who was able to tame a wild wolf. St. Francis of Assisi was one who also was filled with the power of the words of love, which the beings of nature were able to hear and to which they responded. This comes to expression in a most beautiful way in St. Francis's great hymn to the sun, his hymn to the creation, where he speaks of brother sun and sister moon. This great canticle by St. Francis is a true representation of the new impulse of Sophianic Christianity, Christianity of the New Age, a Christianity which embodies the impulse of the Divine Feminine, which takes account of Mother Nature, and which looks to the Divine Sophia as the world soul filling the entire cosmos. This is the perspective that is now becoming opened up in this New Age of Christianity. There is, of course, the question, if we can't see the Christ, how can we learn to find the Christ? Where is the Christ to be found within the world of the etheric? And what are the time rhythms underlying his activity? In order to answer these questions, I'd like to reflect once again upon this 33 and a third year rhythm, which is really a key to understanding the unfolding of the impulse of the New Age. The first question is, when did the New Age begin? Rudolf Steiner, as far as I know, was the first person to refer to a New Age, and he spoke of the New Age beginning in the year 1899. This was the year in which he had the profound, mystical, life-transforming experience of Christ, which changed his whole life, which awoke him to become a prophet of the etheric Christ. According to Rudolf Steiner, the year 1899 was the last year in the age of what is called in the Hindu tradition Kali Yuga, the age of darkness. According to Steiner, this extended over a 5,000-year period. In Hindu chronology, the dark age, the age of Kali Yuga, began in February in the year 3102 BC. 5,000 years later, we come to the year 1899. With the year 1899, therefore, there began the next Yuga. In Hindu chronology, this is the Satya Yuga, which means the age of light. In 1899, therefore, there began the age of light. The word Satya means truth. We can understand the age of light, therefore, to be an age of the light of truth beginning to shine in. This is the significance of the New Age. And what stands behind this shining in of the light of truth? It is the return of Christ. In the saying, there is no smoke without fire, there is no New Age without an actual transformation, a divine presence coming into the whole life of the earth. And this is what is bringing about this New Age of light, the shining in of the light of truth through the return of Christ as a renewed presence for the whole planet. This is the perspective of Hindu chronology, and in Steiner's interpretation of the Hindu chronology, each age lasts half as long as the preceding age. So the New Age, the Satya Yuga, beginning in 1899, lasts 2,500 years, this being half the length of the 5,000-year period of the Kali Yuga. So the New Age will extend from 1899 to the year 4,399, at which time the etheric Christ will withdraw from the biosphere of the earth and will begin then to work on a new level of existence, on the astral plane of existence. Against this background, we can see that the Christ works from age to age to help further the unfolding of human evolution, that he came 2,000 years ago to address humanity on the physical level of existence, that now, in this new age, he is addressing humanity from the etheric or life level of existence, and that in 2,500 years' time, he will begin to address humanity from the astral or soul level of existence. Then again, in a still further distant era of time, he will address humanity from the egoic or devachanic level of existence, the spiritual level of existence. Thus we see how Christ leads humanity and the earth from stage to stage, ever higher in this unfolding course of evolution. Rudolf Steiner links the New Age with this event of the second coming of Christ. He spoke of how the rhythm of the length of the life of Christ, this rhythm of 33 and a third years, is of key significance here. How can we grasp this? If we look at the life between birth and death of a normal human being, during this time between birth and death, the etheric body remains united with the physical body and separates from the physical body at the moment of death, leaving the physical body behind as a corpse. All the life experiences that we undergo during the course of our biography are imprinted into the etheric body. At the moment of death, when the etheric body is released from the physical body, when we are indwelling the etheric body, we perceive the content of the etheric body as a majestic panorama of the whole of life, a series of flashbacks or images relating to the whole of our life emerges in this panorama. Many people who've had near-death experiences have spoken of this event, this beholding of a tableau of all the images of their life lived through up until that moment of death or near-death. In the case of a normal human being, from the moment of death onwards, the etheric body begins to dissolve back into the etheric cosmos. This usually takes about 3 days or 3.5 days. In the case of the Christ, who had completely spiritualized his etheric body, there was no dissolution of this etheric body at the moment of his death and resurrection. So the Christ was able to indwell this etheric body, and it was in this etheric body that the ascension of Christ took place 40 days after the resurrection. As Christ himself said when he spoke to Mary Magdalene in the Garden of Gethsemane on Easter Sunday morning, he said, "Do not touch me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father, but go and tell the disciples that I will ascend to the Father in heaven." With these words, Christ was proclaiming his ascent that would begin 40 days later in his etheric body. His etheric body did not dissolve, but he ascended in it. He ascended to the realm of the Father. In Christian esotericism, the realm of the Father can be understood as that realm which is expressed to us outwardly in the millions and millions of stars shining in the heavens, the fixed stars. The fixed stars of the zodiac being the central belt in this whole world of stars, and that the journey of the soul in the life after death takes place through ascending through the various planetary realms of the Moon, Mercury, Venus, the Sun, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, to enter the world of the fixed stars. This journey of the soul in the life after death is described in the Christian tradition in the great work of Dante, the Divine Comedy. And Rudolf Steiner also depicted this journey of the soul in the life after death. Every human being makes this journey in the life after death and enters into this world of the fixed stars. And there, the decision is made to return to reincarnate upon the earth. At the moment of making this decision, the first step is to think about the need for a physical body upon returning to the earth, and the human being is then engaged in the activity of building up the archetype of the physical body from the constellations of the fixed stars, drawing the forces needed for the head from the constellation of Aries, the forces needed for the larynx from the constellation of Taurus, for the shoulders and arms from the constellation of Gemini, and so on, down to drawing the forces for the feet from the constellation of Pisces. There is therefore built up the spirit seed containing the forces of all the constellations of the zodiac as the archetype for the physical body. The human being then begins the descent through the planetary spheres, returning with this spirit seed, with this archetype for the physical body, down through the planetary spheres in reverse order, eventually to enter into the sphere of the moon. It is here that the event of conception takes place, where in the womb of the mother the egg is fertilized, and at this moment, or approximately close to this time, the incarnating soul sends down the spirit seed to unite with the fertilized egg in the mother's womb to become active in the building up of the physical body. We could say, therefore, that the physical body we have is a cross product between that which we have received through heredity from our parents and that which we have brought down ourselves from the world of stars as this archetype containing the forces of the 12 constellations needed for the building up of the physical body. What I'm describing is a Sophianic wisdom of the stars, a living star wisdom, which is something that is inspired by the divine Sophia herself. Such a new wisdom of the stars will also emerge during the course of this new age. It will entail a living understanding of how the human being reincarnates, how the human being is related to the world of stars, and how through reincarnation, human karma or destiny is carried over from one life to the next. For the purpose of consideration of the return of Christ in the etheric, the return of Christ follows this same archetype. First, the ascent of Christ in his etheric body through the realms of the planets into the realm of the fixed stars, and then a return from this realm of the Father down again through the planetary spheres to return to the earth. This ascent began on Ascension Day in the year 33 AD, which was the year of the crucifixion and resurrection, and the rhythm underlying this ascent was also the 33 and a third year rhythm. In fact, there were exactly 56 cycles of the 33 and a third year rhythm between AD 33 and 1899, so that the ascent of the etheric body of Christ took place through 28 33 and a third year cycles. Then came the descent through a further 28 33 and a third year cycles, so that the beginning of the return of Christ in the etheric was indeed in the year 1899. The full impact of this return of Christ in the etheric began to be felt, however, only around the year 1930, actually in 1929. If we consider that the etheric body of the Christ contains all the memories of the life of Christ, then the most important period in the 33 and a third year period of the life of Christ is the last 3.5 years, signifying the time between the baptism in the Jordan and the resurrection. So it was during this last 3.5 years of the 33 and a third year period that the Christ began to teach, began to perform miracles, began to heal, and eventually sacrificed himself on the cross and went through resurrection. This 3.5 year period we can call the period of the ministry of Christ. So with the return of the Christ beginning in 1899, it was actually some 29.5 years later, in the year 1929, that the ministry of the Christ began. And if we look at the course of the 20th century, we see that the 20th century is actually shaped by the three 33 and a third year periods of the life of Christ. And a true understanding of the unfolding of this rhythm of 33 and a third years enables us to grasp what has been taking place in the course of the 20th century. We could speak of these three 33 and a third year periods as stages of the unfolding of the new age of the second coming of Christ, or we could also say the new age of Sophianic Christianity being inspired by the return of Christ. If we begin to grasp the renewed presence of Christ, the parousia, the significance of this event, this manifestation of Christ in an etheric form, we can begin to grasp that this is in itself an event that is calling forth the divine feminine, that the work of Christ is now directed to the divine mother, just as 2,000 years ago it was directed to the divine father. We have, therefore, a complete polarity between the Christianity that flourished 2,000 years ago and has flourished since then, and the new age of Christianity that is beginning now, which is this age of the awakening to the Divine Mother and to the impulse of the Divine Sophia, the Cosmic Virgin of Light, and the whole teaching of the Divine Feminine given by Valentin Tomberg, of the three aspects of the Divine Feminine, Mother, Daughter, and Holy Soul. We could say this is inspired by the new dispensation of the Christ, the new teaching of the etheric Christ, points us to the Divine Feminine as Mother, Daughter, and Holy Soul. In the continuation of the Sophia teachings, we'll look in closer detail at how these three aspects of the Divine Feminine are related to the unfolding of the 33 and a third year rhythm during the course of the 20th century. With the 20th century, the new age began, the age of the second coming, the age of the new inflowing of the divine feminine, the age also of apocalyptic drama, an age of enormous conflict, as we can see just looking at the course of the 20th century with its two world wars and with its numerous tragedies. It is also an age where there is awakening, spiritual enlightenment, and many wonderful things happening as well. So in this 20th century, we can see, looking back through the course of the 20th century, an enormous conflict taking place, a drama of apocalyptic dimension. And now I'd like to go through this, looking at the 33 and a third year periods of the 20th century as key to an understanding of the unfolding of the New Age. In the first 33 and a third year period, the etheric Christ was working on the level of human thinking, unfolding new life of thought, new spiritual concepts. We can see this particularly clearly in the life work of Rudolf Steiner, who unfolded an extraordinary number of new ideas relevant to a New Age understanding of the world, relevant to grasping the human being as a spiritual being, and to understanding the course of cosmic evolution. Steiner's legacy to humanity is an extraordinary one. Through his spiritual science, he opened up many practical applications of spiritual ideas in the realm of education, farming, medicine, in the realm of therapies for handicapped people, in the realm of art and religion. His life work is truly a testament to the unfolding of a new age, one in which the light of truth is to shine in ever more strongly. Rudolf Steiner died in 1925, before the culmination of the first 33 and a third year period of the century, between the years 1929 and 1933. And if we put the question, what was the central impulse of the etheric Christ in this first period, culminating between 1929 and 1933, we could say it was to bring to birth divine consciousness within each human being, consciousness of our own divine nature, of our own I am, our own divine ego. This was really the work of the etheric Christ during the first part of this century. In the spirit of the words of St. Paul, not I, but Christ in me. Therefore, looking at the unfolding of the New Age, the birth of divine consciousness is really the first step in entering into the New Age, the birth of the divine I am within. Looking now at the second period of the 20th century, from 1933 to 1966, we see the impulse of the etheric Christ working on a different level, coming down from the level of thought, from the thinking level, down into the life of feeling, working more on the emotional level. The work of the etheric Christ during this period of time was to create and sow community. Community in the spirit of the words, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. So the first step, the awakening of divine consciousness, the divine I am within. The second step, the bringing together of individuals in this new consciousness for the creation of spiritual community. This impulse came through particularly strongly in the 1960s, when we see the longing and the search for community coming about all over the place, especially in America and Europe, in the Western world. Here we see the fruits of the activity of the etheric Christ during the second period of the 20th century, the culminating part of which was in the years between 1962 and 1966. The third 33 and a third year period of the 20th century extends from 1966 until 1999. And the culminating part of this third period extends from February 1996 through to September 1999. This is an extraordinary period of time, signifying the culmination of the activity of the etheric Christ during the 20th century, coming down from the level of the feeling life into the human life of will. And it is on this level of the life of will that we are connected with the whole being of Mother Earth. The fruit of this new level of activity of the etheric Christ during this third part of the 20th century, we see in the awakening of human beings more and more to the whole earth as a living being. For example, in the goddess movement, there is the connection with the earth as a living being. This is the ideal that is awakening and coming to expression more and more in various seekers in the Western world. To characterize this new level of activity of the etheric Christ at the end of the 20th century, we could speak of an infusion of life force into the whole world of nature, so that there is an awakening in nature taking place. There is a new vibrancy to be experienced in nature. Considering the ancient mysteries, such as that of Demeter at Eleusis, mystery centers in which there was a true devotion to the Earth Mother, we can look upon the activity of the Etheric Christ as one that invites us to find again Demeter, the Earth Mother. We can look upon the Etheric Christ as the new High Priest of the new mysteries of Eleusis, the mysteries of Demeter arising in our time. If we recall the words of Christ to his disciples 2,000 years ago, when they asked what would be the signs of his return, he said there will be signs in the heavens. And there have indeed been signs in the heavens. If we think back to the year 1996, there was the coming of the comet Hyakutake, which came exactly at the beginning of this 3.5-year period, at the culmination of the 20th century, the 3.5-year period now of the Etheric Christ in his new activity on the level of the will. Comet Hyakutake came completely out of the blue, totally unexpectedly, and appeared in February 1996 to proclaim the beginning of this new period. And exactly 1 year after Hyakutake came Comet Hale-Bopp to proclaim the beginning of the second year of the ministry of the Etheric Christ at the end of the 20th century. These are indeed very special times in which we're living, times of an extraordinary grace, times of an awakening on a deeper level to the mysteries of the Divine Feminine, to an experience of the whole earth as our Divine Mother. This is the Christ mystery of our time. For anyone interested in looking to the message of the comets Hyakutake and Hale-Bopp, if we learn to read the signs in the heavens, these two comets speak to us of an extraordinary challenge facing humanity. Here I'd like to just refer to the trajectory, to the orbits of the two comets, which form a cross in the heavens. And if we look at the point where the paths of the comets cross, this speaks to us from the world of stars, conveys to us an extraordinarily potent message, which is relevant to our understanding of the new Sophia revelation beginning in our time. We can look upon this as an example of a living star wisdom, that is, a Sophianically inspired wisdom of the stars that is able to grasp and read the signs in the heavens. The crossing point of the trajectories of these two comets was at the star Algol in the head of the Medusa. Algol is a variable star which has periods of brightness and darkness and was looked upon in antiquity as the evil eye on account of this variability, the evil eye in the head of the Medusa. We've already discussed the myth of Perseus and Medusa, and I'd like to just return to this briefly to understand the message of the comets for our time. The evil eye of the Medusa, understood in the Greek mythology, was the evil eye of the ancient clairvoyance, turned against the development of the free human personality. And Perseus, as the representative of the new power of Greek independent thinking, was the one who used his intelligence to overcome the Medusa. So if the comets are pointing to the Medusa in our time, What are they saying? How can we interpret what the message is? The evil eye of the Medusa for modern humanity could be considered as the screen which hypnotizes, which transfigures, which, so to say, in terms of mythology, turns the human being to stone. If we imagine looking at this eye for hours on end and becoming completely motionless and giving up our own power of thinking, we have a modern symbol, a modern expression of what the evil eye of the Medusa is. So the comets Hayakutake and Hale-Bopp are pointing to this challenge, this threat facing modern humanity. But not only are they pointing to this danger, they are also showing the way forwards into the future. In order to make this more explicit, if we look back to the original significance of the story of Perseus and the Medusa, it was the story of the triumph of the power of thinking as the new faculty over and against the ancient clairvoyance. If we look at the whole history of human thought through philosophy, Plato and Aristotle, down through the ages with the development of modern science and technology, we can see with the development of the computer that human thinking has reached a certain point where it is in danger of becoming mechanized. And this would signify an impasse for the future development of the human being. The way forwards is from thinking to develop a new clairvoyance, what we could call etheric clairvoyance, a new power of clairvoyance with which we're able to see into the realm of the life forces, the biosphere of the earth, a new power of clairvoyance with which we will be able to behold the Christ in the etheric. This is the positive message and stimulus of the comets to stir within us the force of etheric clairvoyance as a new power of vision, going beyond thinking to become seeing, a new transformation of the inner power of thought to become a power of vision with which we can begin to see into the unseen realm of the life forces, whether we call this prana or chi or the etheric or streams of energy. This is the promise for the future to be able to see the flow of these forces within the human body and all around us in the world of nature. And through this, to begin to behold the work of the Christ as a radiant sun pouring in and infusing the whole world of nature with new forces of divine life. I realize that in referring to the comets, that there have been also negative interpretations. I see the comets in an entirely positive light as bearers of divine love and divine wisdom, and that the message that these comets have been communicating is an extraordinarily powerful one. We need only consider the fact that the comet Hale-Bopp reached the star Algol to cross the path of Hayakutake at this star Algol exactly on the same day, April the 10th, as Hayakutake had reached this point 1 year before. That the paths of the two comets should cross is apparent. Of course, they will form a crossing point somewhere, but that they should cross that point exactly on the same day, exactly 1 year apart, is a sign to us that there is more than mere coincidence. The probability of that taking place is very remote. And so when we look up to the comets and begin to read what they are speaking to us, this points to a vast cosmic intelligence, a higher wisdom and power of divine love that speaks to us from the world of stars. And this is all part of Sophia's new revelation. Sophia's beginning to speak to us of her inpouring divine wisdom. We simply have to learn to read the signs in the heavens in the right way. And unfortunately, I know there were those who had a completely false and materialistic interpretation of the comets, and this is highly regrettable, but it's a challenge now to begin to awaken, to open our hearts and minds to this in-streaming of divine love and divine light, which the comets have conveyed to us. So the comets are the signs in the heavens at the end of the 20th century, announcing this new activity of the etheric Christ in his work of the redemption of the Divine Mother, our Mother Earth. Against this background, we can begin to understand something of the challenges of the 20th century. 2,000 years ago, the mystery of Christ was revealed against the background of birth and death. For human beings of that time, death was the great mystery. And through his resurrection, Christ overcame death. The riddle of death was solved through the resurrection. In our time, in the New Age, there is a new mystery which we have to confront and solve. This is the mystery of evil. The unfolding of the new Christ impulse can be seen in our time, in the New Age, as the drama of a struggle between good and evil. Within the 20th century, it's possible to say literally that the gates of hell have become opened. If we think of the drug problem, just to name one example, here we see a problem that is threatening millions of people. It is a problem of facing demonic beings. Anybody who has worked with the treatment of drug patients, such as I have, will be aware that one is battling against something much more than just a substance, such as heroin. One can speak also of the heroin demon that takes hold of a human being who takes into himself or herself this substance. So that with the drug problem, we have one example of the challenge of the 20th century to confront and deal with and overcome evil. Earlier this century, we had a powerful manifestation of this in the whole phenomenon of the Nazi movement in Germany. That just at that time of culmination of the first 33 and a third year period in the 20th century, 1933, exactly at that time, Hitler became Chancellor in Germany, and humanity had to deal with the problem that this brought with it. So just to illumine this apocalyptic struggle taking place in our time, which is a drama of the divine Sophia, I would like to draw attention to the three main challenges in each of the 33 and a third year periods of this century. These challenges we can look upon in the light of the great vision of Divine Sophia that St. John brings to us in chapter 12 of the book of Revelation, where he speaks of the woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And then he depicts how the woman becomes threatened by the dragon. And if we look at this powerful image of the Divine Sophia being attacked by the dragon, we can see how in the force of the Nazi movement in Germany and in Stalinism in Russia, the head of the dragon reared itself and caused untold suffering. It would be ignorance to ignore this challenge that the 20th century has brought. Interestingly, the impulse of Steiner was focused primarily upon Germany, the bringing of a new Sophia revelation there, and the work of Vladimir Soloviev and the Russian sophiologists was the Eastern Sophia stream coming to expression in Russia, that these two countries, Germany and Russia, suffered particularly the attacks of the forces of darkness, which we can summarize in the symbol of the dragon attacking the Divine Sophia. So, 1933, the dragon raised its head, the beast from the abyss emerged in the form of a powerful temptation that was presented through Hitler to the world. This was the temptation of the will to power. We find an archetype of the various temptations, in particular three temptations in the Gospels, where is described the temptation of Jesus Christ in the wilderness. These three temptations described there are directed to the human will, that is, the will to power is the first temptation, to the human feeling life, this is the second temptation, that of the plunging from the pinnacle of the temple, and to the human thought life, that is, the temptation of turning stones into bread. I shall interpret the symbolism of these temptations for our time. The temptation of the will to power, as it came to expression 2,000 years ago, was that of the tempter appearing to Jesus Christ and saying, "If you bow down and worship me, I will give you all the kingdoms of the world." This was exactly the temptation that Hitler presented first to the German people, but his intention was to become ruler of the whole world. The temptation he presented was, "If you bow down and worship me, I will give you everything you need." Through this temptation of the will to power, there came about the immense struggle through the 12-year period from 1933 to 1945. Eventually, then, the power of this temptation became overcome with the successful outcome at the end of World War II, with the Allies defeating Germany and its allies. Looking now to the 1960s, we see a new temptation came in at that time, the temptation directed at the human feeling life. This is the temptation of plunging from the pinnacle of the temple. What does this mean in an esoteric sense? The pinnacle of the temple is the height of human consciousness, the power of human conscience, the power of human thought and rational thinking. The drug epidemic that began in the 1960s was exactly this temptation to plunge from the pinnacle of the temple, to escape from our rational and conscientious consciousness, to plunge down into our life of instincts, and so to say, to be borne up by this life of instincts. This was the essence of the second temptation that came during the end of the second 33 and a third year period in the 20th century. We can see that we are still having to deal with this temptation, the temptation of plunging from the pinnacle of the temple. Now, in the 1990s, we have the third temptation. This is the temptation directed to the human thought life. The temptation to substitute the dead for the living, to substitute stones for bread. This means to put in the place of reality something created by artificial means. The words virtual reality bring this temptation clearly to expression. Why substitute a virtual reality in the place of reality? This is giving stones in the place of bread. And it is especially this particular temptation which the comets Hyakutake and Hale-Bopp are drawing attention to, the temptation of becoming subject to and hypnotized by the evil eye. This is the temptation that is directed to human consciousness now, particularly in the 1990s, as the third temptation of the 20th century. Therefore, we can see the interweaving of the struggle between good and evil, as this also is revealed to us in the powerful image of Sophia as the world soul being attacked by the dragon. What is at stake is the human soul. The attempt of the dragon or the forces of darkness is to take over the human soul. And just as Christ, 2,000 years ago, lived through the three temptations in the wilderness, now with the second coming of Christ, the whole of humanity has to live through these three temptations. This is really the drama of the 20th century. But just as 2,000 years ago, at the end of the three temptations in the wilderness, as is described, angels came and ministered unto him. So the promise in overcoming the three temptations directed to the human soul, to our faculties of thought, feeling, and will, the promise in overcoming this is the opening to the spiritual dimensions of existence. Angels coming to minister unto the human being. This is the great challenge as we stand at this threshold to the new millennium with the year 2000. The theme of the challenge of the battle with the forces of darkness is one that is intrinsic to grasping the unfolding of the divine feminine in our time. The great Russian prophet of Sophia, Vladimir Soloviev, wrote at the end of his life his vision entitled A Short Tale of Antichrist, where he speaks of this challenge for humanity of the future to encounter the powers of evil and to awaken through this confrontation with evil to new spiritual levels of consciousness. This is what this is all about. We need to awaken to the Divine Sophia as the bride of the Lamb, as the one who is streaming down to us new heavenly forces to help in the work of the transformation of the earth. I see in looking at these three periods of the 20th century that in the first 33 and a third year period, there was an extraordinary pouring in of the light of divine truth through the divine Sophia in such individuals as Rudolf Steiner. In the second 33 and a third year period, it was more the second person of the feminine trinity whose impulse came to expression in the spiritual community. Now, in the third and last 33 and a third year period of the 20th century, it is especially the awakening to the first person of the divine feminine trinity, the divine mother, that is coming about, as is evident in the awakening of the goddess movement, particularly since the 1970s, but more and more strongly in the 1980s and now in the 1990s, this awakening to the goddess of the divine mother. This is part of the new inflowing of the divine feminine in the 20th century. Behind this is also the work of the Christ. And it is often the case amongst those who experience an awakening to the living being of Mother Earth. At the same time, there awakens the knowledge that historical Christianity has done much to suppress the mysteries of the divine feminine. And very often, this knowledge is accompanied by a mood of wishing to turn away from Christianity. This, however, would signify throwing the baby out with the bathwater, for the Christ himself is now also actively engaged in the work of redemption of the Divine Mother. And we gain a fuller picture when we look at this whole unfolding of the impulse of the Divine Feminine in the 20th century against the background of the parousia of the Christ. The Christ who is awakening and now putting forward a new face of the divine. Coming now to the life and work of Valentin Tonberg, who has brought us this inspiring, powerful image of the divine feminine trinity. His life's work was dedicated to bringing a new spiritual impulse into the 20th century, which he called Christian Hermeticism. So what does this impulse of Christian Hermeticism have to do with the new revelation of the Divine Feminine? In order to characterize this, let's look back to the origin of the stream of Hermeticism with the Egyptian sage Hermes, who lived before Moses and who for the Egyptian people signified what Moses did for the people of Israel. Hermes taught the priests of Egypt the essence of the Egyptian religion. He taught the mysteries of the temples. He taught the science of the stars, and he taught the Egyptian people the writing in hieroglyphs. Hermes was one of the great teachers of humanity, one who was inspired by Christ and Sophia in their pre-Christian, pre-incarnational form. Hermes taught the religion and devotion to Osiris and Isis. For Hermes, Osiris was the pre-Christian form of Christ before Christ incarnated, and Isis was the pre-Christian form of Sophia before the manifestation of Sophia through the Virgin Mary. Osiris and Isis, therefore, are the same beings as those whom we now call Christ and Sophia, the Son and the daughter, looking therefore upon our time as a time of metamorphosis of ancient Egypt. Through Christianity itself, we can conceive of a metamorphosis from the religion of Hermes in ancient Egypt to the activity of Christ in the etheric and to Sophia. It is this that is really the key to understanding Christian Hermeticism, which was the impulse and teaching of Valentin Tonberg. If we read the seminal work, Meditations on the Tarot, A Journey into Christian Hermeticism, we find in this work a fusion of the stream of Christianity and the esoteric stream of Hermeticism. We find practical instruction for the spiritual path of Christian Hermeticism. And out of this, we find a new way of relating to these divine beings, Christ and Sophia. This is the great legacy of Valentin Tonberg to humanity in the 20th century, the possibility of finding a spiritual relationship with these beings. In terms of the Book of Revelation, Sophia is the bride of the Lamb, and Christ is the Lamb. And the Book of Revelation points to the coming into existence of a new heaven and a new earth through the sacred marriage of the Lamb and his bride. This is the powerful, wonderful vision that is presented at the end of the Book of Revelation, which depicts the goal towards which humanity and the earth is striving. How will this creation of the New Jerusalem as the coming into existence of a new heaven and a new earth come about? In the vision of John in the Book of Revelation, the bride of the Lamb is depicted as coming down from above, descending from heavenly realms, bringing the forces of the new heaven with her. And the Lamb is depicted as having sacrificed himself into the earth, bringing about a transformation of the earth, raising the whole earth up in spiritualized form. The sacred marriage of the Lamb and his bride signifies the fusion, the union of Sophia descending from above with the forces of the new heaven, and Christ ascending from below, raising up the transformed earth. The sacred marriage of the Lamb and his bride points us towards the goal of our present earth evolution, which we can call the arising of the New Jerusalem as the next condition, the next globe of evolution, that which Steiner calls the future Jupiter stage of evolution. And so the dramatic struggle of our time is one of coming to an awareness of the work of the Christ transforming the earth and of the inflowing of the divine Sophia from above. Against this background, this drama of the world evolution, we can see the work of Christ and Sophia, the bride and the Lamb, in this new age, the age of the apocalypse, an age which signifies the beginning of the creation of a new heaven and a new earth, and signifies the awakening to the Divine Mother and the unfolding of Sophia as the world soul. An awakening to Sophia as the world soul. This is the powerful message of the Sophia teachings, which are essential for a true grasp of the 20th century and of that which is to come when we cross the threshold into the new millennium.